This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. Go to braintreepayments.com/whatthetech for more information. What the Tech? Hey, everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroid. How you doing, Paul?
I don't know. I'm a little tired.
Welcome I'm pretty back. Good. Paul the Globetrotter Theroid.
Yeah, 2 weeks home, and then I get to do it again.
Where are you going now after this?
France.
Oh, yeah, you're doing the France trip.
Yeah.
But at least you're in a house there, right? Like you're you know, it's like it almost feels like it's your home away from home.
Yeah, yeah.
This is more of a vacation.
Yep.
How'd it go? A little bit of work. I saw your pictures. My wife was admiring them this week and said, I've been there.
Yeah. We went back to a lot of places we'd already been. I mean, the point of this was to bring Stephanie's, my wife's parents out there and show them around. And it was pretty good. I mean, they'd never been to Europe before. That was interesting, you know. So, yeah, I thought it went pretty well.
I saw that the weather was phenomenal for most of the
time. I know. Easily the best weather I've ever seen in Ireland.
I don't think that's known to happen
in
Ireland.
We only had one real washout day. You know, the rest was pretty good.
I mean, it was almost perfect. I think, like, the last day was bad, right?
Yeah, that was about it.
I was looking at the picture. I'm like, wow, these are great. A lot of people were asking me, what were you using to take the pictures?
Smartphones. I used Lumia 1520. And actually, I probably used the iPhone 6 Plus more often. I started using, you know, I got one of those Olo-clip lenses. I don't remember if we ever talked about this there.
Yeah, the ones that clip on the lenses. Top.
Yeah, so there's one lens on each side. You can kind of flip it around. One lens was a wide angle I didn't really like. The other one was a 2x optical zoom, which is pretty good. But, you know, I wish, you know, what you really want is like a telephoto lens or something that you can zoom in and out
those.
With.
They don't have those? I would imagine
they might.
They do.
I was kind of trying this. I also have a macro lens from them I can use to take pictures of electronics and things. But I found it a little ponderous. I mean, I think that the beauty of a smartphone is that you pull it out of your pocket, take a picture, and you put it back in your pocket, and you're done. Yeah. And with the Olo-clip, you can't have a case of any kind, so I had to take the case off. When you take the case off of an iPhone, it turns into a bar of soap, so you got to be really careful of it, which is hilarious when you're on top of a cliff in Ireland. And then, you know, you got to manage the lens, you know, on, off, on. You know, there's no way to leave it on the phone and just get it out of the way. You have to pop it on and off.
So you brought the 1520. You wouldn't bring the 1020 with you since it's almost a little bit of a better camera?
So now that the Denim update is out, it dramatically improves the speed and the picture quality on the 1520 and on the 930. But not on the 1020. And so actually I would say with this, as of a few months ago, whatever, as of, I don't know how many months, 4 or 5 months, I think the 1520 and 930 are better at picture quality now. And the performance is dramatically better.
So it's not a game of numbers with megapixels, really.
No. I mean, the 1020 is wonderful, but it's slow. And yeah. it can be painful to use compared to the new stuff. Newer, I should say. It's not new.
We have so much to talk about this week. Yep. A lot has happened, especially over the last couple of days. I don't know if you heard this, but Microsoft is done, Paul. They're finished.
Yes.
Forget about Windows 10. Forget
a lot of
about
misunderstandings about this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot. I mean, they've taken a huge write-off. That obviously means that it's over for them. I want to talk about that, including Windows 10 is almost here. RTM is almost here. Mm-hmm. A couple other things are happening today. El Capitan, the public preview is out. So I want to get to that. I want to talk about all of that. But before we do, we have to take a moment and talk about our sponsor. We need to thank our sponsor, and that's Braintree. Now, if you are an app developer, if you have a business, if you have one of my buddies, he has a very, very successful clothing company here in New York. Paul may not like him. They are a Mets brand clothing line.
What?
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of this. New York Mets.
I have no animosity toward the Mets. That's fine.
Oh, yeah, well, you guys are in the other division, so it's fine. You know, you guys
let's
hit the
face
Yankees.
It, the
you
Mets
guys hit
aren't
the Yankees.
Really a New York team anyway.
Oh, my God. So bad. During a live read, Paul, how dare you?
I know.
I can't even
Sorry,
say
please
anything.
Continue.
I can't even say anything bad to you.
Just mute me. It's fine.
That's what
like
I'm going to do.
I'm like a child.
Yeah. One of my friends, he has a very successful clothing company, and they're associated with the Mets, and he's looking at doing mobile payments. And I sent them a little email. I'm like, hey, have you checked out Braintree? Now, they are an advertiser of the network. They are an advertiser of mine. But people like that will benefit from this. Why? First of all, there are companies like Uber. I don't know if you've heard of them. Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Living Social. The list goes on and on. Major, major companies that have incorporated Braintree in their mobile payment process. The reason why they do this is because it accepts almost every type of payment. PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin. Every major credit card, all different types of currencies. They have unbelievable fraud protection where it assigns you a token. So the vendor doesn't really, you don't get the credit card information. There's no breach in the credit card information. It authorizes it based on a token and you're set. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. The other great thing is if you want to incorporate this, your first $50,000 of transactions are fee free. So it costs you nothing to try it out. $50,000 is a lot. It's not Trump change, guys. It's a lot of money. So you could use this for a while if you're an up-and-coming business, you're a startup. And if you're a coder, it's a couple lines of code, very easy to implement. If you need someone to talk to, guess what? They are there. There's somebody on the phone. We'll help you out. We'll hold your hand. We'll guide you through the entire process. Go to BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. Checking them out. You know, even if you're not looking to do it right now, go to BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. Check out the process. Check it out. Read about the service because it is it's actually really great that it's one piece of code, one brand, one company that's doing all these things. And by the way, they're a PayPal company. I don't know if you see the lower third, so you could trust them. BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. I want to thank Braintree for supporting What the Tech. And, of course, I want to thank them for supporting the GFK Network. So, Paul, where do you want to begin?
Where to begin? I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So
you've had four Windows 10 builds in a week.
So RTM is almost here.
Let me get rid of my cat.
There you go.
Got a little needy since we were gone.
RTM is almost here. Any day now?
It was supposed to happen today.
Yeah, I heard the 9th. What happened?
Yep. There was some kind of a problem. So.
Yeah.
We're going to iterate builds, and I bet the next build or one of the next builds will be it. But yeah, today was supposed to be it.
So we are 20 days away from the release.
Can you hear this animal?
No, I can't.
Really?
But I can't hear anything.
She's incessant.
We're 10 days away, 20 days away. So RTM has to be here any day now. There wasn't a new build did get pushed out, right?
Today. Yep. That's right.
Would that have been RTM?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
20 days is not a lot of time.
I know. I spoke to Dell right before I went on the trip, and then I subsequently didn't write this article until near the end of the trip. But, you know, they were telling me at the time that Windows 10 would have to RTM within days for them to meet the schedule, and that wasn't unique to Dell. I mean, you know, planes only fly so fast. You get a blast the stuff on machines, put them in boxes, ship them to stores, that kind of stuff. And we'll see how it goes. There's never been a schedule like this before. There's no precedent for this at all. I mean, granted, you know, we live in an electronic age. I mean, things can happen more quickly.
Not like they're shipping CDs to.
Literally, in the old days, they used to hop in a helicopter with gold discs and fly them over to Silicon Valley. It was stupid. I mean, so it's not like that anymore. Yeah.
But I mean, it's still a lot of work for the OEMs to do, the manufacturers to do, knowing that they only have 20 days, probably 19 days starting tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of work for them to kind of do this and to test it out. Do you think there's going to be a delay for the OEMs?
So the biggest PC makers, well, not all of them actually. So, Dell, for example, doesn't have. Actually, yes, they do. I was going to say, you know, I think the way it's going to work is you're not going to see a lot in stores. And what I was going to say until I realized it was completely wrong was that a lot of the biggest PC makers don't really have much of a retail presence. But actually, Dell and HP are in Best Buy, et cetera. So I think most people probably would buy computers from those companies and from Lenovo, obviously, online. And you can order it online on the 29th and maybe you could get it the next day. But I think it's more likely you're going to get it the next week. And you know, what Dell basically told me was, and actually HP told me basically the same thing, was that, you know, they knew about Windows 10 for years. They knew what hardware advances would be included. They knew to include that stuff in their existing computers the year before it shipped. and that Windows 10 would work even better on existing PCs than Windows 8.1 did, you know, and so that upgrading would be kind of an easy process, and they could sell them as new computers with, you know, Windows 10 on them, and new features would light up, you know, as a result. So I think that's the stuff you're going to see on the 29th, and then there'll be new PC designs from everybody coming out in the days, the weeks, the months, you know, after that.
So what are we, with RTM coming out any day now, is there going to be a difference between what they are getting and what we are going to get on the 29th? Is there anything that's going to be left out of the RTM?
Yeah, I would say yes, because in every Windows release, and this is true of phone as well, between the RTM release and general availability, Microsoft ships updates, you know, and actually, the schedule for phone was very formal in this way that they always knew that when RTM shipped, that there were updates planned before it went out to the public. They knew this. Like, and there was so much headway, or I should say built-in time in the schedule for phones because, of course, these things don't ship, you know, to consumers. They go out to wireless carriers and there's like stage schedules and everything, that they would have time to deliver those updates to the hardware makers. The only difference here is that, you know, it's a much more compressed schedule, but we're absolutely between RTM and GA, Microsoft will absolutely ship. They'll ship updates for Windows 10, and then they'll do it every week and every month and whatever after that as well. So Windows 10 is kind of a revolving story.
Yeah, but how about like key features, key upgrades? Is there anything that's being left out?
No, not that kind of stuff. Okay. I don't think so. You know, there may be goofy things that aren't so much major features, but they may enable major features, right? There was an Intel driver that Dell was waiting on so that you could use Windows Hello with the camera in some of their computers, the RealSense camera.
Yeah.
At the time I spoke with them, they were actually kind of wondering where it was and, you know, we're expecting that anytime soon, but presumably that will show up by the 29th. If it doesn't, you know, maybe that would be something. And so if you've got Windows 10 on a Dell PC, you'd be like, I can't use Windows Hello to log in, but a week later the driver appears and then all of a sudden you can. And so that may seem like a new feature if that's how it works, but I don't think so. I think we're looking at, you know, fit and finish drivers.
It's pretty much done at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I sure hope it is. With 20 days, that's not a lot of time. But I guess this is the new Microsoft, the new way to do Windows, right? Like, it doesn't matter how, as long as it's working, as long as it's fine on release day, it's okay. They could push an update any day.
Anytime.
Yeah. It's not like it used to be, you know. It's
also apps too, right? You know, apps get updated on your phone every day. Yeah. Apps can get updated on your Windows PC every day. You know, same mechanism, right? Through a store app of some kind, you'll get updates. It'll be fine.
I guess for a lot of people, when you compare something that's coming to crunch time, right? You start panicking, you're like, well, what kind of bugs are gonna be there? And I don't think it's the Windows Vista mentality. That's not gonna happen because it's easily fixable now. If there's a major bug, Microsoft could fix that within a couple hours.
It's the difference between a paper book and a blog page, a blog article, a blog post. You know, in the old days, if you were going to write a book and you were going to publish it on paper, you had to get that thing right because when it went out the door, it was done. There was no updating it.
Yeah.
You know, and book publishers never wanted to do updates to the books. They hated, you know, they added a whole new layer of expense. They never, you know, barely ever wanted to do that. Blog post, instantly. So you have a typo, grammar error, you left out some information, something changes, you just want to update it, you can do it anytime you want. And that's really how Windows has evolved, if you think about it. I mean, in the old days, it was literally a disk. And of course, they did update the OS, but they update the OS or can update the OS continually now.
Yeah, and you're not going to have those driver issues that, you know, I think for a lot of people, knowing that it's coming so close, it's a little worrisome, but I don't think it's, you know, it's pretty much Windows 8 with all the upgrades that you wanted. It's going to run, if it runs on Windows 8, it'll run. If it runs on 8.1, it'll run on Windows 10, pretty much.
Yeah.
For the most part, unless you have some crazy driver like me, for example, that I can't.
I mean, almost universally, I would say. I mean, yeah. I don't think there are going to be any issues like that. Even drivers, you know, Windows 7 drivers, Windows 8 drivers, Windows 10 drivers. I mean, obviously, you want to use the Windows 10 version, but those things all work. They'll work fine.
Yeah. A couple of questions for you, Paul. And you know, I've asked you this a bunch of times, but I constantly get these emails and I get asked all the time. Like, I have an IdeaPad here, a couple years old, about 2 years old, an IdeaPad. It's an AMD A6 processor. It's a dual core. I mean, it just sits here and it runs the IRC when I'm looking at it, but I wouldn't mind upgrading this. So if I upgraded it from 4 gigs to 8 gigs mm-hmm. and put an SSD in here, how will my Windows 10 experience be?
I mean, assuming the processor is compatible, right? Because one of the issues when you go from Windows 8 to 8.1 or to 10 is that some older or lower-end processors don't work anymore, right? Even though they did with 8.0. And I'm not familiar with that processor.
I think it came with Windows 8, so.
I mean, if you can't, I would try to upgrade it to 8.1 first. Yeah. If you can get 8.1 on there, you're all set. I think the performance is going to be just as good, or if not better than it was in 8.1. So sure. I think it's going to be fine. I mean, I test laptops. They're high end, low end, mid range, whatever. And honestly, for desktop productivity tasks in particular, there isn't really much of a difference. You know, RAM makes a difference. The speed and amount of storage can make a difference, right? If you're going from an Atom with 1 gig or 2 gigs of RAM and 32 gigs of eMMC storage, all of those things could be upgraded. A real core processor, not upgraded, but you know, if you were to jump to a new machine with a core processor, 4, 8, whatever gigs of RAM and SSD, you're going to see a huge jump there. But as you go up through the core processors, as you go up through SSD types, as you go from built-in graphics to discrete graphics, et cetera, you don't actually notice a huge change for productivity tasks. And so if that thing runs the desktop fine today, I would say it's going to be fine for Windows 10 for the most part.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to give advice that Paul gave me. If you're looking to buy a computer right now, wait a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would wait.
Wait and see, anyway.
Yeah, wait and see what comes out, because there's going to be a lot of things that you kind of... I'm still big
on this trackpad. If you're going to buy one anyway. Yeah. You know? I mean, the things I would look for would be a camera or a fingerprint reader that works with Windows Hello, because I, you know, just like it does on an iPhone 6 or whatever, that kind of instant sign-on is kind of a big deal.
Okay.
You know, Dell was talking about audio stuff with Cortana. That's going to depend on you and the way you work and everything. I don't see myself, and I certainly have never do speak to the computer. Like, I don't sit here saying, you know, talking to the computer, but for some people that may be a big deal and you might want to get something that is designed for that kind of thing. You know,
any specific changes to trackpads and the way that multi-touch is going to be done?
Yeah, I mean, so
with gesturing.
Yeah, Microsoft. There's two things. Microsoft introduced the notion of precision trackpads with Windows 8.1. I think it was. You see that on Surface Pro 3. They've expanded the capabilities that you get with a precision trackpad, which I can't bring up here because I don't have one. But the other one is they have new multi-touch gestures that are Windows 10 specific, right? So if you're familiar with how they worked in Windows 8.1, we could kind of swipe in from the edge to get charms, to get the switcher. Those have all changed, and so now they're Windows 10 specific. That stuff should work fine. I mean, I think across the board for most people, I mean, the precision trackpad requires specific hardware, but that's the type of stuff I never use. I mean, I pretty much turn off trackpad gestures. I mean, what I like is two-finger scrolling. That's about it.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately for a lot of those lower-end and mid-range PC-based mm-hmm. laptops, it's not so great.
Yeah. Yeah. Although this has been a good year for trackpads on the PC. You know, the Lenovo trackpad, the ThinkPad trackpads are fantastic. The Carbon X, the X1 Carbon, and I think it's T450S.
Are you not a fan of the little nubbin on the thing?
No, I prefer the nubbin.
I
actually prefer the nubbin. In fact, on these machines, I turn off the trackpad and leave the nubbin on. That's what I prefer. Yeah. But if you'd like to use a trackpad, those are good trackpads. And the HP has great trackpads. In fact, they have a Force Touch trackpad, a lot like the Apple MacBook, on some of their Folio devices, which is kind of interesting.
And so it's a positive. If you wait, you know, you get something with this, it's going to be an advantage for you, and it's going to be a better experience overall when you, you know, go to Windows 10.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm waiting for, pretty much.
Yeah, 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 we're all.
I'm excited, Paul. You know, I said this last time, but, you know, with Windows 8, I was kind of not that excited, and I didn't do the upgrade on a lot of my machines. Almost nothing, really. I downgraded some of them. Because for productivity reasons, it just worked a lot better for me. I didn't want to mess with what worked well. For Windows 10, on the other hand, I'm confident that it's going to be more of a you know, a Vista to a Windows 7 type upgrade, where you're going to say, okay, wow, yeah, this is great. You know, if you come, especially if you're coming from Windows 7.
So I think so. But there's one big difference. Windows 10 brings forward sort of evolved versions of the touch kind of UIs and the new app model stuff from Windows 8, right? So if you stuck with Windows 7, I think the one thing that may confuse you a little bit, or you may not even like, is that, yes, there's a start menu, but the start menu is nothing like the one in Windows 7, right?
Yeah.
It's not the same. And so I think some people are going to adapt to that pretty easily. Some people are going to want to fine-tune it. Maybe they get rid of the tile stuff and, you know, configure the rest so it works a little bit more like the way that they want. If you were doing stuff like pinning apps to the taskbar and using that as a launching point instead of the start menu for a long time anyway, which I think I started doing with Windows 7. So
which a lot of people
in,
do, yeah.
Then it won't matter, you know. But there's also going to be a group of people who look at this and say, you know what? This doesn't look or work the way that I want it. I don't think the apps are going to be the problem. I think it's going to be the start menu. And so in those cases, I guess the only thing I would say is you can use a third-party utility to make it look somewhat or exactly like the one in Windows 7. If you're really stuck on that,
yeah,
there are choices there. And I wouldn't skip Windows 10 because of that. I feel bad about Windows 8 because it was such a kind of widely hated OS that a lot of people didn't get to take advantage of some pretty tremendous desktop features because they were so hung up on the touch stuff, you know, in the start screen and all that, which I get, but don't do that for 2 releases in a row because this one's kind of a big deal. And those the app model, in particular, those apps that are built in are really fantastic. And there's some good stuff there.
So here's my question. I mean, this is my opinion. And I think this is going to be an easier transition for someone going from 7 to 10 than it will be for someone on 8 to 10.
Oh. I think they both have
as far as
challenges.
Aesthetically goes. You know, like aesthetically... if you're on 7, this is a more of an upgrade than a, wow, okay, what's happening? If you were on 8 and you got used to Metro, you got used to the new UI.
Think about it this way, though. If you had gone from 7 to 8.1 and you were a person who started using the taskbar instead of the start menu for launching apps and stuff, that you know, in my case, I think I bring up the start menu mostly to run start search, which actually in Windows 10 is Cortana, but you hit the start button, you start typing, and because you're looking for something you don't access all that often. If you did that with Windows 8.1, it would have worked basically the same way, except you would have, you know, for that brief time, you would have had a full screen thing going there. But you would have booted into the desktop. It would have worked a lot like Windows 7. It would have been a little more attractive, in my opinion, but, you know, opinions vary on that. And you could have taken advantage of the new apps, although they would have run full screen. And so it kind of depends. I mean, I think there is a start menu, but it's not the start menu you used to. Apps do run in Windows, which I think people, you know, from the Windows 7 world in particular prefer. It depends. If you're a tablet guy, it's a bit more complicated because there are people who really liked Windows 8.1 in particular on tablets. It has some nice edge UIs, which I think are very effective and work for, you know, semi-intuitively. And those don't work the same way in Windows 10. And so I think that's going to confuse some people. So it kind of depends on where you're coming from.
So Brony on Twitter asks, and this is something we've discussed all the time, a few questions. How soon after release of Windows 10 should I install? 2 months, half a month, what do you suggest? Whatever you're comfortable with is the answer. Well, so for me, I'm not installing it on any production machines till I know that the weird specific drivers that I use are going to be supported, and they've worked out some of these kinks. But if you are on a laptop and you're doing word processing, for example, and basic browsing, you could install it and you know, deal with it if there's any problems. I would not install it on any production machines.
I think a lot of people listening to this don't need my advice. They're just going to do it, and it will be okay. Normal people, I would say, wait a month. You know, let the millions of people that are ready to guinea pig this thing do so and see what happens, because there are going to be issues that come up, you know, that simply can't come up during the beta, because now we have a much bigger crowd of people actually doing it. And so we'll see how that goes.
I apparently mispronounced his name. It's not Brony.
Her name. Yeah.
Her name.
Right. I don't want to say it because she's going to. She'll chastise me.
How do you say it?
I would say it's, isn't it Bronwyn?
Bronwyn. Yeah, her name. Yeah, that's her name.
Brownie's good though.
Brownie.
You're doing a great job, Brownie.
They're delicious.
Brownie, I guess.
Brownie, like the paper towel.
Yeah, not like the guy who mismanaged the Louisiana thing.
No.
During the Bush administration.
Yeah. I want to take a moment to talk about Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Oh boy. A lot of misconception over this story. A lot of bizarre tweets I got about it's the end for Microsoft. They're giving up on mobile. They're giving up on the phone. From what I understand, Paul, and you tell me if I'm correct.
Yes.
They are not saying they're giving up. They are saying that they are going to kind of streamline this and have less phones coming out every year.
Well, I mean, they're saying a couple things. So a lot of people have extrapolated this to different markets and, you know, different things. They're not giving up on mobile, but they have been talking about kind of an evolved mobile strategy for the last couple of years, right? And that evolved strategy has more to do with the mobility of experiences, which means the ability to get access to all of your data and the Microsoft services and apps wherever you are. If you're on a Mac or a PC, if you're on an Android device, an iOS device, the web, whatever. And you know, people who are in the Microsoft camp don't like that kind of stuff because they want to see Windows first. They want to see Windows best, you know, that kind of stuff. And so part and parcel with this, they have committed to continue making what they call first-party devices, meaning Microsoft devices, Surface, Xbox, Lumia, whatever, for the foreseeable future. And with phone in particular, actually what they've said is they have in fact conceded the smartphone market. I can't remember the way he worded it, but Satya Nadella said, we no longer have a strategy of growing this hardware business. He understands, and Microsoft does, that they're not catching up to Apple anytime. They're not catching up to Android. This isn't going to happen. And for the short term, what they're going to do is focus on three key markets, business, the value segment, which is what they've been hitting for the past year unsuccessfully. And I forget how they worded it, but, you know, Windows, you know, phones for Windows fans, meaning flagship phones. Right?
So flagship emerging in business.
Yeah. And to do so with fewer models, right? Because I think one of the big problems that Windows Phone has had, or I should say Lumia has had, Microsoft has had over the past year is they just have released a bewildering range of almost the same phones. And they're all really low-end for the most part, some mid-range phones finally. And it's just confusing and lousy and weird. And so I've talked to a bunch of people since this announcement, on the record, off the record, et cetera, and I've heard some interesting things. But they'll be leaving certain markets, which could mean entire countries. They'll be leaving certain carriers, for example, and you don't have to look very hard to figure out where Windows Phone does better and where it does worse on carriers here in the U.S. to sort of have a rough idea what that means.
I mean, it's obvious they do their best on Verizon, right?
No, they do. No. So we'll see what that, you know, how that happens. They're not leaving the U.S. market, by the way. I mean, you can't sell phones and not be part of the U.S. market. And a lot of their biggest fans are here in the U.S. They're not going to ever have like a volume part of the market, but they understand the importance of giving their biggest fans great devices so they can show them off and talk about them and evangelize the platform and all that.
I mean, but
long term, though,
for long,
it's not about phones.
Long term business. How different is this from the strategy, you know, 6 months ago?
Well, the strategy 6 months ago was grow the smartphone business, right? The strategy they had for the past year was forget about flagships until Windows 10 ships, ship a bunch of low-end phones, get, you know, they always talk about that, remember that phrase, you know, the next billion, right? Sometimes it's the next 5 billion. This notion that there are all these people out there in third world countries or emerging markets, you know, places that have never really come online with technology that are going to be buying their first phones. And these phones will be their only computers, right? There's a huge market out there, and Google's going after this market, and Microsoft has been going after this market. This really hasn't panned out for Microsoft at all, from what I can tell. And they're still going to hit that market, but they do this with the understanding that this is no longer the point, that they're not going to make money on these devices.
Okay, so here's how I see it. They had to change their strategy. They were in a limbo period between 8 and 10. it would have been kind of silly to release a new flagship phone while halfway through development of their next version of, you know, their next software, maybe. whatever it is.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So, I mean, this to me seems like, okay, well, I mean, think about it this way. Imagine if Apple, for example, released the iPhone 7 while we were still on the old version of the operating system of iOS. We were still on iOS 8, and then iOS 9 was still being developed in beta. It didn't make sense. Listen, I'm playing the side of defending Microsoft in this case. They had to put something out.
Sure.
A
couple of people have admitted to me that they made a big mistake not releasing some flagship. You know, they've let too much time go by. You know, the last one was last spring. It was the 930. It was not available in the United States. And so the last flagship that shipped in the United States was the Icon. I think that was February or March 2014. Seems like longer ago than that, but I think that was it. Before that, it was the 1520 on AT&T in November 2013, I guess. It's been a while, you know. So,
I mean, it's been a little too long. But I mean, if they were to release it, you know, if they released it in 2015, it would not have really been.
It doesn't matter what they did. They could have released five flagships. It wouldn't have changed anything. That's the thing. I mean, that's the point. It doesn't matter what they do. It's not going to succeed. And they know that. So they've given up. So they will continue to make the hardware. They will continue to sell phones. And then, of course, the next question would be, why? You know, like, why would you bother? Microsoft feels like they've missed this cycle, you know, that they got into the smartphone thing too late. They didn't make it. They missed it. It's over. And so they've conceded the smartphone market. But mobile continues. You know, Windows 10 Mobile doesn't just run on phones. It runs on small devices of various kinds. And, you know, who knows what the future looks like. We've already moved from to much bigger phones. With phablets are a big deal right now. I mean, maybe that trend continues. Maybe we're going to be walking around 7 or 8-inch tablets that have phone capabilities. And, you know, Windows Phone will magically, or whatever, Windows 10 Mobile.
Yeah.
Somehow be a good system for that. I don't think so. But I think the next – we don't know what the next hardware – phenomenon is going to be. I think for a little while people thought it might have been wearables. It doesn't appear that that's the case. But I think it's important for Microsoft to retain their hardware making facilities. And I don't mean physical facilities. Maybe I should have said faculties.
Yeah.
But they need to keep this expertise up, because at some point they want to do whatever that next new form of first party hardware is, whatever that might be, wearables, whatever. And we don't know what that is.
I mean, let's take me for example, right? I am kind of their demo for a Windows phone.
Okay.
Right? Like, I'm in the know. I like their interface. I like everything about it. But for me, being on Verizon, we got the Icon a little too late, knowing that Windows 10 is coming, knowing that flagships are coming. So I'm kind of out of it. I'm not.
Yeah. I mean, Verizon's a bad example because.
Yeah.
Verizon is a company that literally today just started selling phones in their stores that Microsoft was showing off to the press last August.
A year ago, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's so there's Verizon in a nutshell. You know, Microsoft has had problems with Verizon for years.
I mean, someone in the chat room, I don't know if how true this number is, but Microsoft has almost 10% share in Europe, in most of Europe.
And they have high single digit share in the EU5 or whatever.
Yeah. So obviously their strategy for, I guess, emerging markets or lower end devices is kind of working in that sense. But the reality is, unless you have a flagship that's selling a million phones, people really don't want to hear about it.
They
think it's a failure.
Well, it is a failure. I mean, we should be clear. Windows Phone is a failure. You really have to be that blunt about it. It's just a failure. That doesn't mean it stinks, by the way. I mean, I love Windows Phone. There are a lot of things that are great that don't succeed. I mean, I do feel that Windows Phone is great. And I prefer it. I use it. It's still what I want to use. And Microsoft has committed to making these things for years to come. And so if you love Windows Phone, you can feel comfortable knowing that you'll have new hardware, including flagship devices to choose from this year, next year, and going forward. And we'll see. I wrote a thing about this today, although I've already thought of the devil's advocate response to it, you know, which is that Microsoft needs to differentiate Windows Phone, I guess Windows 10 Mobile, its own devices, in the same way that Surface Pro 3 has differentiated itself against competing devices that, you know, PCs, laptops, and so forth. And, you know, what does that mean for phone? Like, what does it mean to differentiate in phone? And you can look at Windows 10 and you can say, well, it could have a camera that can sign in when it sees your face. It'd be kind of cool. And of course, they've talked about Continuum, where you can plug it in or use wireless and sit down at a desk and have your phone be your PC. And that's kind of interesting. But anyone who thinks that, see, the problem is, don't be confused. This is not the future of Windows Phone. You know, it's not the future of smartphones. Smartphones that turn into PCs is not the future. And I want to be really clear about that. And here's why. The PC market is tiny compared to the smartphone market. No one is trying to turn phones into computers. That's ludicrous. That doesn't grow the market.
Yeah.
If your phone can be used as a computer, that's just another thing it can do. But that doesn't mean that 1.5 billion people are going to be doing that. It's still only going to be a small percentage of people that actually use a phone as a computer, like with a keyboard, a mouse, and a big display.
So what is the really what is the future of Windows Phone? I mean, what is there? You know,
there's no future for Windows Phone. I mean, but that doesn't mean that the underlying platform doesn't have a future. So I think people have trouble understanding the difference. Windows Phone is just an implementation of an OS on a certain kind of hardware, but that OS with Windows 10 runs on all kinds of hardware types. So that platform still has a very good chance of being very successful across a wide range of devices. It will be all on phones as well, right? I mean, I guess the real question here is, what is the future of the platform and what types of devices will it be the most successful on? And we'll see. We know that it's going to be very successful on PCs.
So it's a strategy that we're not our phones aren't selling well, but our platform is selling really well. Look at the adoption rate of Windows 10 all across all these devices. Right. So what? Some are laptops, some are desktops, some are phones, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you know, I'm going
to. It's a little convoluted of a strategy to kind of, you know.
3 months, 6 months, 1 year down the road, whatever it is, Microsoft's going to be able to say there are now some number of people using Windows 10. I doubt they will break it down across device types, but they'll give you a number, 300 million, 500 million, a billion. Someday they're going to say a billion. And when you have a market of a billion devices, it doesn't really matter what type of device they are. In fact, it might be most interesting because it is so many different device types, right? It's going to be PCs. It's going to be video game consoles. It's going to be smart screens. It's going to be phones.
Yeah.
It's going to be embedded devices, Internet of Things connected devices. So that really, it's not baloney, right? It's not bullshit to say that that is an incredible developer opportunity and that people who write universal apps that can run on all of those platforms or in some selection of those hardware platforms that they choose have an opportunity that is as big or bigger than what's available on Android and is certainly bigger than what's available on iOS. So it's not, you know, it's not a complete disaster. I tend to look at it from the – I love Windows Phone. I think about – Windows Phone is a big focus for me. Windows Phone has failed, period. There's no – well, we'll see what happens. It's failed. It's over. It's, they will keep making them, but they're not – this is not the focus.
Okay, so let's talk about that. As a failure, did it fail because of mistakes or did it fail because there is not enough room in this market to compete with Android and iOS? When you have almost every manufacturer in the world making Android phones and Apple being, you know, the flagship.
Sure.
If you want to talk about smartphones, that is the flagship smartphone in the world. How do you compete as a third brand?
Right. Well, so, you know, back when Nokia got into the Windows phone business, Stephen Elop talked about the third ecosystem a lot. And Microsoft adopted that terminology as they brought Nokia in-house. That third ecosystem hasn't really emerged, you know, unfortunately. I mean, there is a third ecosystem. They do have an app store with X number of apps in it. They do have millions and millions of users. They also have 3% and falling market share, you know. So it has not emerged as a force to be reckoned with in any way, shape, or form.
Look at BlackBerry. I mean, they're abandoning their platform and they're going to Android now.
Yeah.
That's the future of BlackBerry.
But they do that because they have to.
They have to,
and that will, you know, that will be the last gasp that their Android device is not going to sell well either. Why would you buy an Android device from a company that couldn't sell their own stuff? You know, like, you know, switching to Android is going to solve problems for BlackBerry. It's
no, but you know what it would be? It would just be you're in. If I were to think for them, I would say, well, BlackBerry has a reputation in enterprise. We have a reputation with security. Android has the ecosystem, so it'll be easier to bring people over that were former BlackBerry users back to BlackBerry, knowing that the ecosystem is, you know, large.
I think that's already passed.
I think so too. But I mean, they were the third.
Would have been
ecosystem.
Interested in this have already moved to iPhone or Android. You know, you asked earlier about what caused Windows Phone to fail. It's like anything else; it's a bunch of stuff, and we don't have enough time to go through the whole list. But I mean, you touched on a couple of them, but I also think late to market, it's just too much of a gap, was a big part of it. They did make mistakes. They did some stuff that was incredibly right. I think wireless carriers played a big part in it. They were not interested in selling those products and really hampered Microsoft's ability to get the devices out and to deliver updates to customers. All kinds of stuff. You know, there's a bunch of stuff there.
I don't know. I just think it's the market. I don't think there's enough room for another.
Yeah, but that's the question. In other words, looking at it 5 years ago, incredibly 5 years ago, is there room for a third ecosystem?
I don't think
maybe.
So.
At the time, like maybe. Today, clearly no.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, a lot of people certainly saw this coming, and I certainly had my own suspicions about it, but you can look at any other market, and certainly electronic markets, and there aren't really a lot of cases where multiple platforms succeed side by side and despite being completely incompatible. And things tend to consolidate, you know. So this market is following a very natural curve that has occurred before and will occur again.
I mean, let's compare it to 5 years. Let's compare it to 7 years ago. I mean, who was the third ecosystem? You had BlackBerry and you had Palm. And
well, but see, that wasn't a big market, you know. In other words, when the stakes aren't very high, you can have a bunch of little things. You know, in the early 1980s, we had Atari and Commodore and TI and Tandy and whoever else, a bunch of other small companies, I'm sure, making computers. I mean, but eventually, this market becomes a big enough deal that consolidation occurs naturally. Some platforms succeed and some don't. Sometimes the good ones succeed, sometimes they don't. You know, there's no way to. Sometimes it's just company mismanagement. Commodore was a terrible company, but they made the best computers for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how things go. You know, Palm, Windows Mobile, Pocket PC, whatever it was called, those days, they were selling tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of devices. I mean, it was not a big market.
I think at the end of the day, I mean, you look at for a while, I don't know if you thought this, but I definitely thought that the future of Android would not be in these stock versions of Android being sold. It would be that Samsung would have a very different looking Android device and HTC would have their own. I mean, the Amazon method. And we saw what happened to Amazon. It did not sell well at all. It's running Android, but it's its own ecosystem. It's its own design. It's its own look.
Even that stuff doesn't work.
And that didn't work. At the end of the day, you know what works? It's the simplest of things. Whatever your friends are using, whatever the mainstream is using, that is what you're going to use. There's a reason why everybody
software
uses
industry has been obsessed with piracy since the early days.
Who is?
I think the software industry.
Yeah.
But I think what a lot of people don't understand is that it is piracy that drives usage.
Absolutely.
You know, when somebody says, hey, I got a copy of Windows I can give you, you know, just get a PC. You'll be all set. You know, 25 years ago, whatever, you're like, okay. You know, and you become a Windows user, and then, you know, your next computer you buy, you're going to get a Windows PC, and guess what? You just paid for Windows.
Listen, it's like a gateway drug, right? Metallica, for example.
I'm not saying steal software. I'm just saying we do make decisions the way you described it.
Yeah.
You know, what do my friends have? You know, people, I think you were talking at one of the shows earlier about, you know, people who stick with iMessage or iPhones because they have iMessage.
And that's me, right? I use iMessage all the time, and that's why I have a Mac.
Yeah. It's kind of a lock-in thing, but that's why, you know, I mean, Apple gives away their OS for free and people are like, oh, this is a wonderful company. Look how benevolent they are. And it's like, no, they make money on hardware, guys. they want to keep you in there. If they keep you in their system,
and services,
you'll
now,
buy a new one next time.
Yeah. And services with iCloud.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. If you're on their ecosystem for long enough, right? You've been using an iPhone for the last, let's say, 4 years since the iPhone 4, right? That's about 4 years ago. 4S, 5S, 6, you know, four or 5 years ago.
Yep.
At some point, you're going to have a lot of photos. And at some point, you're going to run out of storage on iCloud for backups. So what's going to happen? Sure. You're going to start paying them for 20 gigs of storage or 100 gigs of storage, yeah. whatever it is.
By the way, do you know why I started paying Apple for storage?
Because you ran out of storage?
Well, yes, but do you know why I ran out of storage?
Why?
Because of all the backups.
Yeah.
Like if you just have the free amount of iCloud storage, and you know, my son has an iPhone, my kids both have iPads. I have an iPhone, an iPad. Actually, I probably have two iPads, an iPod Touch. I mean, just in the standard course of normal backups, have filled up, you know, the free iCloud space. I'm not putting photos up there. This is just backups.
It's for my wife. It's all photos. It's all photos. I mean, you're talking 4, 5, 6 years of photos on there. And 5 gigs is not going to cut it, considering each one of those photos are now 3, 4 megs. You know, full res image, if you're backing those up, which I do. I want full res as the backup.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you do? You know, now you got to pay them.
Got to pay.
And guess what? Now you're locked in.
You know what you're not going to do? Is switch platforms.
Yeah, now you're making your money.
I mean, you can make decisions within...
But Google's the same way. Like I recently ran out of storage on Google.
So you could keep your iPhone but use Google Photos.
I have 10 years of emails, 10 years of attachments in those emails. Now I have, since 2009, I have photos backed up. I have documents backed up. And I finally ran out of 15 gigs, so I had to upgrade to 100 gigs. So now they're getting $1.99 a month, whatever it is. But that's how they make their money. Nothing is free. For Apple, they're making their money in their hardware. They're making their money on paying for these services.
Yeah. By the way, I mean, just to kind of put this back into the Microsoft story, there's a little bit. I mean, there are some questions about the viability of the strategy. But, you know, imagine from Microsoft's perspective that you decide you're going to use OneDrive for your photo backup. So even maybe using an iPhone and an Android device, it doesn't matter. But because you use Windows PCs, because they have such a good deal on storage or whatever it is, and because it's everywhere, so why not just use it? You know, they're going to run into that issue that you're talking about where you want to pay for OneDrive storage somehow. Maybe you buy Office 365 and you pay them $99 a year for the family or whatever it is. They haven't had to go through the R&D and the manufacturing facilities and all the stuff that comes out with making a phone. Nor do they have to worry about upgrading you with new and improved hardware that has to always meet the times and is really hard to develop and all that stuff. They're just selling you a subscription service. You know, I don't think there's any evidence yet that, you know, like OneDrive extra storage or whatever, or even Office 365 has for consumers has amounted to Microsoft's next $1 billion business. But even if it doesn't, or if it does, the overhead to doing that is so much less. It's a less risky business. And if hardware norms change immediately overnight, they're not sitting on a bunch of unused devices that they can't sell now. Right. I mean, I'm not saying it's like a great strategy per se,
yeah,
but there is a rationale behind it.
But Microsoft's approach is, you know, it's interesting because now their approach is, well, let's put our software, let's put things that normally were exclusive on the PC everywhere.
Right. You got to go where the customers are.
Yeah. And that kind of fits into the model that, listen, we're not worried about making hardware. We're worried about creating a platform and having people locked into our platform. Yeah, you could buy a PC and it's still running Windows. You could buy a phone, it's still running Windows. Tablet, it's Windows.
I guess, but you know, the neat thing is they do make hardware. And so if you do want the absolute best experience with these services, or in the case of a PC, you want the absolute best PC you can get, assuming you can live with the form factor and the screen size and whatever stuff, that experience is going to be on Microsoft, you know? And they will... I shouldn't say always, but for the foreseeable future, that is something they can claim. I mean, they have that.
Yeah.
And so you can run OneDrive on an iPhone. It probably works fine to back up your photos. It's probably fine. You can run Office 365 in there. It probably works. It does work, I should say, exactly as well as it does on a Windows phone or whatever. Actually, today it works even better because you can't get the apps on Windows phone. But, you know, it doesn't make sense for them to ignore the hundreds of millions of people on those platforms.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Especially when you're competing with something like Google Drive, for example, that's free.
Yeah.
You know,
and just is there and is just kind of configured.
Yeah,
by
it works
pretty much.
Oh, you need to do this. Here it is. So it's an uphill battle for them. You want to touch on this really quickly? The layoffs, the 7,800 employees that are laid off, and the $7.6 billion in write off on Nokia's purchase. You know what it almost felt like when they first announced that Nokia partnership? It was like, yeah, we want to buy them. You know what? We're just going to partner with them at the moment. We don't know if we're going to buy them.
You could kind of get the feeling they were holding them at stick's length. You know?
That's exactly
Nokia
what it was
has
like.
Been on a downward spiral for a long time. A lot of people blame Microsoft or they'll blame Steven Eliot for Nokia's problems when, in fact, this was a decade of mismanagement and terrible executive decisions and so forth. Nokia's decision to embrace Windows Phone as the primary platform was very exciting at the time, 2011, I guess it was. I was very excited to see those devices and all that stuff, but they've been going down, down, down. You know, and had Microsoft not bought them, Nokia would have belatedly tried to adopt Android and would have failed miserably, and they would have gone out of business all on their own. And that
you
would have harmed.
You think if they adopted like on that N9, they went to
If they'd gone to Android, they wouldn't exist today. They'd be gone. And the reason is simple. There are already lots of people making Android. No one cares about Nokia Android devices. They would just be another small fish in a giant pond. You know, the one thing that they got with Windows Phone was the ability to control a market that was all, you know, not all theirs. I mean, obviously there are other partners, but they own it. It's 97% today. And a close partnership with Microsoft that other partners didn't get, Samsung, HTC, et cetera. The ability to impact the platform, which would have been impossible on Android.
Yeah.
Right. Where things that Nokia did made their way back into the OS, like maps and so forth. So it was the right decision, you know. Just like Microsoft buying Nokia was the right decision. You kind of have to put air quotes around it because the alternative was that company going out of business and irreparably harming the Windows ecosystem. Satya Nadella was against it. And he is, I mean, as of today, has actually laid off about 80% of the people that came over with Nokia, right? So between the layoffs from last year, they laid off 50% of all the people from Nokia. That left about 12,500 people. There were further layoffs that probably laid off some percentage of that. And now 7,800, almost all of which come from phone. You know, we're looking at roughly 20,000 of the 25,000 people that came over have been
are
laid
gone.
Off.
Yeah.
The $7.6 billion write-down, which is what that is. They called it something else, like an impairment charge. It's a cute new term for write-down. It's a write-down. Is basically a corporate way of saying that we are washing our hands of this. We don't believe that we are ever going to generate revenues or profits from this business, and we are just we're wiping that away. It's just it's writing it off the books.
I'm curious on what they're going to do next year.
I know. Well, Microsoft and Nokia before it always had plans for the next year, next couple of years. How is this thing going to work? Last year at this time, their plan was low end phones, and they really beat the hell out of that strategy, and it went nowhere fast. And so we'll see how it goes. I mean, we're going to see some flagships this year. We're going to see some Windows 10 devices. It's going to be interesting. And next July, we might be having a conversation about how now they give up forever. I don't know. You know, I hope not. I think, I mean, phone.
I mean, if they gave up. If
there's an end game for phone, you know. That's
how would they give up, though? If they gave up, that would mean that Windows Phone is gone, the platform is finished? Or would that mean that...
See, I don't really... It's not so much... I don't really think they're ever going to totally give up on it, right? It may get weird. You know, I mean, if you imagine if Microsoft exited the phone market totally, they still have this platform. They can still license it to people for free. Anyone could make a Windows Phone. It's possible that one of the smaller phone makers like Blue or something might, you know, emerge as the big fish in this tiny, tiny pond. And you would, you know, we would still have in certain markets the ability to buy Windows phones by other companies. I mean, I think small tablets running Windows Mobile will be reasonably successful. I mean, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, but do you think, like, I'll give you an example. Like Windows, like Android on Lumias. Yeah. Is that an option for them for the future?
No.
Where they could just pack it in with their services and have an Android fork?
I don't remember what I wrote. I wrote something about Android being, you know, Microsoft's plan B for mobile. And I think it was for some time. It was obviously Nokia's plan B for mobile, which is why part of the reason
I think it's everybody's plan B for mobile.
Yeah, but the thing that I think when you look at it today, and I say this in a complete Monday morning quarterback sense because we know what's happened. I think the thing people need to understand is that it's better for Microsoft not to make hardware than to make hardware for a platform that they can't in any way control. Yeah. And I think this ship has sailed. You know, in other words, anyone who thinks that like an Android device is somehow going to be like a savior for Microsoft doesn't kind of get it. You just talked about how it doesn't work for Amazon. It's not going to work for BlackBerry. It's not going to work for Microsoft. You know, there's no major market share to be had by making something that's sort of Android that doesn't really run Google Play apps. You know, it doesn't have Google Maps. I mean, I don't. You know, in the same way that people, it's not so much that people ever thought about, oh, I'm a Windows fan. I run Windows. You know, you ran Office, you ran Photoshop, you ran iTunes. So you sort of think about it from that perspective. Yeah. I think people who buy an Android device don't necessarily associate with Android. They run Gmail and Google Maps.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. Third party apps that are, you know, popular on the big platforms like Uber and whatever else. So I think this is just over. I think it's the end of it. You know, this kind of generational thing is over. And Microsoft, you know, we now have a rather dubious legacy. We, like, as I'm part of Microsoft, Microsoft has a rather dubious legacy of chasing after Apple for the past decade and never quite arriving in time. They copied the iPod with Zune. They copied the iPhone with Windows Phone. And yes, I know in both cases they had some pretty incredible, sometimes innovations on top of what Apple had already done. But they're just following into markets. They're not trailblazing. And I think the point of what they're doing now is to set themselves up where they could possibly be a trailblazer for some future mobile market that we don't necessarily understand yet because it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are feelers out there. There's Continuum stuff, there's HoloLens stuff. We'll see. You know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but they're going to be trailblazing in a very small market.
Well, no, but the point is to find the next big market, you know. And we don't know. Maybe it's the screens that you walk in the room and they light up because you're there. And, you know, maybe it's and you know, they'll be able to look back retroactively and say, see, all that stuff we talked about, it all makes sense now because we have smart screens everywhere in our house or whatever.
The year 2025.
Sure. Yeah. And we all have, you know, rocket sleds and, you know, floating or sneakers that let us fly or whatever.
That's exactly what we need. That's exactly what I mean. All right, Paul, let's wrap it up. Hey, guys, if you like what we do, you want to help us out, you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/whatthetechisthepage. You can fund us anything you want, quarter, a nickel, a dime, a dollar, whatever it is, and it helps us out to keep this show limited with the ads and keeps us going here at the GFK Network. Paul, therot.com is the website. Anything new coming up on there?
Ugh.
A very busy couple of weeks.
It's been a busy time. I kind of glided there a bit when I was on vacation, but
it's time
in over my head.
I know you have 20 days of, and then after the 20 days, a lot, you go into like DEFCON mode and you're just bunkering down and just,
well, I've been working on the book too, right? Yeah. I've got a Windows 10 book coming out and,
a phone book.
Well, so, I specifically put the phone book off, until the, you know, the PC book was done. And now, given what's just happened, I'm kind of going, my own plan B, which was when I talked to Raphael and Martin about this book, was you know, maybe phone becomes part of this book rather than have a separate book. It might not make sense. And now I'm actually leaning more toward that, because why would we bother? You know?
Yeah. Oh, boy. A lot's happening. All right, guys. That's it for this week. We'll see you all next week. Take care.